Scalloped potatoes are creamy, browned goodness. Eggplant parm is too, and a little crunchy. The Escoffier series continues with more of Chapter 7. We're almost done. Today we cover the gratins. The Eating Liberty Podcast, Episode 259, Food and Freedom, Once a Week, for Life. Hello folks, Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the podcast. The Escoffier series continues in Chapter 7 with gratins. You've probably seen the phrase au gratin on menus. Now, obviously, the word is French, and it means with a crust. Now, often, that crust is created by browning breadcrumbs or cheese in high heat or under high heat or with high heat. You might have eaten dishes that were gratin dishes. French onion soup might be one of the most popular. Oysters Rockefeller, well, might be dating me, but that's another popular dish, or maybe it used to be. Baked macaroni and cheese is nothing without a good breadcrumb crust. Any casserole can be a good place to finish the dish with a gratin. Perhaps the most famous gratin-style dessert is the creme brulee, which isn't technically a gratin, it's a caramel, but it does have a nice crunch on top. And it's kind of fun to break through, but I'm kind of tired of the dessert. Since nothing is simple in the Escoffier's world, he lists four kinds of gratins. The complete gratin, the quick gratin, the light gratin, and glazings, which are a form of the quick gratin. The complete gratin means to cook all of the ingredients for the dish in the serving vessel, so when the items are fully cooked, the sauce has reduced to the proper consistency and the top has browned well. For us, scalloped potatoes might be the dish everyone knows as a full gratin, even if you didn't know it was a full gratin. Escoffier takes more than a few sentences to explain why a full gratin is challenging. He writes, quote, "It is the most painstaking because, firstly, the main ingredient, whatever it is always raw and has to undergo a complete process of cooking. Secondly, the process of cooking has to keep in step with the reduction of the sauce, which is the agent of the gratin. And thirdly, the cooking and reduction of the sauce has to keep in step with the formulation of the crust on the surface, which is the actual gratin," end quote. Potatoes are rather easy to make into a full gratin, and there's a lot of room for error to be overlooked. Meat gratins, on the other hand, are more cautious or require more caution about making them and to make sure there's not too much sauce for too little meat. Remember also that in Escoffier's time, the food was served from the platter to the plate. It was a show, and the guests did, in fact, see the deliberately arranged platter of the pretty food. So, a chicken breast gratin would include the garnish of mushrooms and pearl onions, perhaps, under the gratinade breadcrumbs and sauced before the breadcrumbs were added so that it was all a complete portion serving. Suppose you were to gratin veal scallopini pieces. The heat of the oven required for cooking and gratinating that dish depends entirely on the size of the main ingredient. Scallopini are thin. Thin pieces of meat require high heat, and the smaller pieces, require lower heat. Also, depending on how high the heat is, you need to adjust your quantity of sauce. High heat cooking dishes are going to get less sauce than the low heat because they're in the oven less time, even though the heat changes. Getting the timing right, so the food is cooked and the sauce is reduced to the right consistency, and so the breadcrumbs are well browned, is no small feat to do or say, it seems. The quick gratin is the same but different from the complete gratin. The significant and only difference is the meat or fish or veg is already cooked. It is reheated first, sauced and covered with breadcrumbs and drizzled with butter, and finished in the oven like a complete gratin. Now, Escoffier intended the melted butter to be drizzled out on top of the breadcrumbs and the sauce. That works, but it's inefficient at coating all the breadcrumbs. What works better is to put the melted butter on top of the breadcrumbs, which are in a small bowl, and mix them all well so that all of the breadcrumbs are evenly and equally fully coated. They will help absorb, they will absorb some of the butter, but, you know, is that really that terrible? Sprinkle the buttered breadcrumbs on top of your quick gratin and you'll get much better results. You can also add a little salt and pepper into the breadcrumbs for a little seasoning, and that's going to make it taste good too. The light gratin is that which we see on macaroni and cheese dishes or lasagna or baked gnocchi. The significant difference between the topping of a light gratin and a quick or complete gratin is the addition of some cheese to the breadcrumbs and butter. Finely grated Parm is a good choice, but any hard cheese would work. Feta would work with the proper compatible dish. That would be something with some really potent flavors in it. Gouda, for you Hollanders, Gouda, can be firm and melts like a dream. And just to go off on a cheese rant for him, not a rant, a cheese vein, there's a joke there for a moment. If you can find, the grocery stores now are including pretty snappy, fancy cheese counters in some of their stores. If you can find a well-aged Gouda, get it. There's some spectacular things happening with all cheese, but Goudas are really worth finding, and they are much better than the poor imitations you find already sliced in the packet on the shelf. So back to Escoffier. Generally, the light gratin is for starchy dishes, pasta or rice, but also would include vegetable dishes like breadcrumb stuffed tomatoes or stuffed mushrooms of any sort, crab meat, sausage. It could even be a vegetarian with, you know, like onions and onions and stuff. So veggie stock, maybe, well, not really too much. So breadcrumbs would be the main thing. Add onions to that. If the vegetarian would eat eggs, that would help hold everybody together. But that would be a nice gratinade thing. It seems the light gratins would be the place to include eggplant parmesan or other kinds of individual gratinade dishes as well. The last one, the glaze. There are two kinds of glazes Escoffier identifies, because of course there are. The first is created by well-buttered sauce, and the other from cheese sprinkled on top of a sauce covering the food. Now, it is a very common thing in French cooking, if you're making a sauce, to at the very last minute finish the sauce with what they would call a knob of butter. What the hell is a knob of butter? Well, depending on how much sauce you have, a tablespoon or two or nine of butter into the sauce it'll thin it just a touch. But the main contribution the butter makes is a velvetiness that cannot be achieved in any other way. And it's good. So a well-buttered sauce. So let's suppose we had a pint of let's just do a bechamel. We're going to probably want to make sure that bechamel is a little bit on the thicker side, since we're making this knowing that we're going to use it for a glaze. It might also be used as a binder in maybe those, well, depending on how vegetarian you go, those vegetarian stuffed mushrooms, just a little bit. So we're going to add probably a little bit more butter. So for 2 cups, let's be generous and say half a cup of butter. That's a lot of butter. So a well-buttered sauce for the first kind of glaze. Now, this is where it gets kind of tricky. The first glaze requires that the dish of food be placed in a slightly larger pan or dish with some water in it. Basically, you're making a water bath. The point of this is to keep the food dish with the sauce in the food dish at a temperature below boiling so that the butter they say split the sauce. What that means is what has happened, when you add butter to a sauce, you've created an emulsion. You're adding fat into liquid. Normally, they don't like each other, but there is a way to get them to cooperate and behave. But if you make that emulsified bechamel with extra amount of butter and then apply too much heat to it, they're going to get mad at each other, and they're going to go the separate ways. They're going to split. And then what you have is big pools of butter coming out of your sauce, and it doesn't taste good. It doesn't look good. So glazing in this first way, in that water bath, ensures, or at least reduces, the risk that the sauce is going to split. So we have our chicken breasts going to be glazed in our bechamel. We need to do this under high heat, because the intent is that as soon as we spoon this sauce on top of the chicken and put it under the high heat, it's going to glaze almost instantly. Now there is a point. All ovens, all broilers have a finite heat limit. They're just full blast is full blast, and you can't go more than that. And I can tell you that in every kitchen, the ovens and the salamander broilers are on. They're on. There are no temperatures. On or off. On is 500 degrees, and the broiler is whatever it is. I think the different kinds of salamanders, I have no idea. I'm going to guess and be wrong, so I'm not going to do that. Scott's point is, for the higher butter content enriched sauces, you need to glaze at a higher heat. But that's not, on is on. So I don't really know what to do about that. He wrote it. I don't know what he means. I don't know how you do that. So we'll move on. The second glaze uses almost exclusively sauce Mornay. The item is coated with the sauce, then sprinkled with grated cheese. He also adds to sprinkle it with butter. Now, I would use those buttered breadcrumbs, which will brown nicely, but also add a nice crunch. Brown the item in a hot oven or under that broiler. In the commercial kitchen, I mentioned that it's hot, and the thing I mentioned, the salamander. So the word is, it's a salamander. Same word as that little thing you find at the beach. I don't know why it's called that, but it's a... some of them are, most of them, they're all gas, but some of them look like broilers. Some of them have ceramic plates with little teeny pinholes for the gas to come through. And those suckers put out more, they put out some heat. So it's designed to do exactly what it does, melt or gratinate dishes at the last minute. Now here, there is a small complication / challenge to using breadcrumbs on the second glaze, and that is that if your cheese doesn't brown quickly, the breadcrumbs might. So we might end up with extra toasty, which is a euphemism for burnt breadcrumbs. The way around that is, and this is just another step, so you put your cheese on your sauce Mornay covered thing, you brown that And when it's halfway or so through, add the breadcrumbs to that, finish that, and you probably get a decent brown on both of those things. Now, let's back up. So as a reminder, sauce Renee is a bechamel sauce with Gruyere and Parmesan cheese. Bechamel sauce is milk thickened with a roux and an onion pique, which is onion, bay leaf, and clove. So it has more flavor than just milk. Now, your Mornay is kind of the canvas for the rest of the cheese. You could go more Gruyere. You could go cheddar. Remember, this is just a thin layer on top. So there's a lot of ways to go. Thinking also, either you're going to contrast or the flavor or match, be compatible with the flavor of the rest of the items on the plate. So more Gruyere, could be Parm. I mentioned feta. Feta doesn't melt, but it would taste good depending on it. So if you've got tomatoes and olives and something spicy hot, that might work. Blue cheese and caramelized onion. Oh, blue cheese and melted leeks. Oh, man, that would be good. I think I know what's for dinner this week. So there's lots of ways to go. A gratin or an hors d'oeuvres can look very nice on those soon-to-be-coming holiday cocktail parties. And we're back to those stuffed mushrooms. You can make little, instead of big pieces of chicken breast, cut them thin and then cut them into squares. And they're not going to keep their shape exactly. We'll put them, so gratinate them, put them on a cracker so that, and then you're going to need some kind of a spread, a very small kind of spread. And it could be a bit of the room temperature bechamel sauce to hold the chicken on the cracker. Now, keep in mind that if you're using a sauce, the cracker's going to sog out fairly quickly, so that may not be the best idea. But you need some kind of a thing to hold it on there. Butter would work. Butter would hold it on there and help repel the moisture. Gratinate main courses, or maybe for a twist, you can gratinate some ratatouille with extra Parmesan cheese and the breadcrumbs. That would be nice, and like individual dishes. There's a lot of room for incorporation here. So if it will taste better with browned cheese or crunchy toasty breadcrumbs, and there's a lot of room there, it's quite likely a good dish to turn into au gratin. All right, folks, that's going to do it. My roof garden cucumber harvest was rather impressive, according to me. I picked 7 pretty good-sized cukes, and with nearly all of them, I made lacto-fermented pickles. Now, this is a new step for me. I've never made this before. The closest I got was making kimchi last year, and that was a lacto-fermented thing, but this seems to be a different direction in the same general area. So I do plan to make kimchi again, but I'm excited about these lacto-fermented pickles. They haven't started fermenting yet, and the time, I have no idea, because the author who wrote it, I don't know how warm her space was, but it'll happen. I think probably a week to 10 days before I can, they're in a big 3-quart jar. I was also very excited to find that at the used crap store. That was a big deal. It was a really good jar for $9. I feel like I got the win of the day. So I'm tickled about this. So I'll share my updates as they come. And I hope they work. I'll be bummed if they don't. And then lastly, football season is here. If you like dips and such, for football game, for recreating or throwing at the TV when the bad guy wins or scores, I have a few recipes published on the blog. Surf over to culinarylibertarian.com/sportsball, and there is the best onion chip dip recipe you will ever need, and a very fine rendition of a spinach and artichoke dip, and a few other ones, including a recipe for some wheat crackers and some soft pretzels, because you don't even need football for soft pretzels. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.